Welcome to the Agile Revolution. This is Craig. We're at the Yow Connected Conference in Melbourne, which is a mobile and Internet of Things kind of dealy. But there's still some kind of Agile stuff going on, and I've ran into someone who kind of speaks my language, well, at least sort of. It's Mark Peterson. How are you doing, Mark?
Very well, thanks, Craig. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
And you're from KJR, yep. Formerly known as KJ Ross.
Yep.
Tell us what you do there and who they are, very briefly.
Cool. So these days I'm the CTO, which is really means I look at new things and work out what does that mean for KJR. KJR is a software quality consultancy, so. Back in the day, we might have talked about ourselves as a software testing company. I think these days, as we've just been sort of chatting before the tape started rolling, that has changed a lot. And so I think it makes a lot more sense to talk about software quality than it is makes sense to talk about software testing. That's an activity, but software quality is much broader than that. And these days, it's really important. And one of the reasons why I've been here at Yow Connected is we've been doing stuff in like the mobile space, but you know, it's critical for us to learn about what's happening in the IoT space. What are people trying to do with new mobile technologies, other embedded technologies, and what does that mean for risk mitigation in those spaces?
It looks like you're doing some interesting stuff, and you had a great talk yesterday at the conference about that. I want to get that in just a moment, but I guess I probably want to just roll back a little bit. And one of the things you said, we're just talking before offline, is the changing role of a tester. Because 10, 15 years ago, and people who listen to this podcast are bored of me probably talking about this, but 10, 15 years ago, that was a separate team. They were almost the bottleneck, at least from the developer's perspective. They were the gatekeepers of quality. They wrote big, fat documents. And then Agile came along, and one of the things I noticed, I don't know whether you did, was the when we first introduced Agile into teams, we didn't quite get how QA fit in.
Yeah.
As a result, we'd do a bunch of work and then we'd throw it across the wall at the tester. And I think what we've learnt in more recent years is that has to change. So what are you kind of seeing in your...
So, I mean, one of the stories that really opened my eyes, like I'd been looking at Agile, talking about Agile, wherever I could get a chance, trying out various techniques. But, you know, as often has been the case, testers are pretty subservient to whatever, you know, the dev team was saying was the methodology. Mm-hmm. And by and large, in the early days of Agile, testing was a kind of luxury item that people who adopted, the early adopters of Agile, they were running on a shoestring, so they just built code and shipped it basically. And then the larger enterprises that had testing divisions where I might have something to do with them weren't doing Agile. They were very much stuck in the waterfall game. But we, as that started to change, and particularly in the web space, so that's typically where we found it starting to change. People were adopting Agile in the web team. That was not enterprise. It wasn't the big legacy back-end space, and that's where you're finding the fresh young talent, and they want to do Agile. So one of our clients decided, web teams going Agile, or rather the web team themselves decided to go Agile. I don't think anyone else in the organisation had much of a say in that. And they had a good crack at it, but it wasn't really working. And there was some issues with A, requirements and the form in which requirements came in. And then also they would iterate and build stuff and then hand it back to the business, and the business would go, no, this is not acceptable. And so they were trying to do Agile, but in a very fragmented way. So they reached out to us to bring the QA function into that Agile team. And it is really interesting. I think in some ways, as much as people say that it makes the testing role blurrier, I actually found that it clarified a bunch of things that testers kind of do... in waterfall scenarios by default anyway, without it properly being part of their role. So for example, in a waterfall scenario, you get given requirements and you have to write tests to those requirements, and you're doing it in this very siloed fashion. But the unspoken role.
Well, for the three people that followed the V model.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the unspoken sort of role is that the test team often becomes the basically the business rule and subject matter experts because the BA team is gone.
Mm.
They wrote the requirements. The project's not funding that team anymore, so they've moved on and they're writing something for some other project. And so if there's a lack of clarity in requirements, then the testers were clarifying that through the process of actually doing their test analysis
and
all that kind of
stuff. Yeah, and on that, one of the things that I often talk about is if you think about business analysis and development, you can go to university and you can do a business degree, you can do an IT degree, but there's no testing degree.
Yeah.
So what happens with most testers is that, and this is, you know, there's very much a generalization, but there are other developers who perhaps didn't quite enjoy it or didn't quite cut it or whatever it might have been and went, here's my place. Or there are business people peering over the fence going, that's how I get into IT. And that's how a lot of people end up in the testing sphere.
Exactly.
Or they just got some knowledge and they go, oh, you can test that.
Yeah.
But that's not the skill of testing. Domain knowledge is not... does not make a good tester.
Exactly. And so I think what we found in particular in this client space, one of our roles was to help transition the organization into a much more agile form of requirements elicitation. So they were still writing 30-page documents and handing them to the web team, who then tried to iterate and try to sprint on those 30-page documents. So
and how'd that work out for you?
Oh, badly. You know, because they would hand the code back and then the business would go, oh, but you missed the footnote on page 10. And I'm like, well, if that was an important requirement, why was it a footnote?
Because we could fill in that stupid little index card.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, they were writing Word documents. So one of the things we did as the test team was going, okay, well, we're going to chain the BA to a desk for the start of the sprint, and we're going to translate that whole document into a set of acceptance test criteria. So basically we're bringing in Cucumber as part of that whole process, so that instead of a 30-page document, you got user stories with the examples. So the given, when, thens, not particularly wedded to whether you use a GWT sort of format for expressing that, but I think the idea of a user story with then a number of key scenarios and say, if this works, then I will be happy. That's what the meaning of this user story is. Getting that clear up front, developers were much happier. They knew exactly what they had to code for. And the roles of the QA team, or members within the Agile team, was a lot clearer as well, because we had a lead who was able to understand the business and could do some of that translation, which is the sort of secret role that most testers have in a waterfall land anyway. And then we had some technical testers who were essentially automating. And they sat right next to the devs. The challenges for the testers were they'd never used this particular IDE before. They didn't they weren't necessarily conversant with checking stuff in and out. So, you know, there's a few kind of like respect issues that come up because the testers don't know the tools straight away. But as soon as you get over that, then the devs start going, oh, actually, I can see how you're adding value, because you're catching things before it goes back out to the business. And we're actually building better code and delivering it and getting less rejection. Happy days.
And it legitimizes that thing that as testers we've always been talking about, which is we want to be involved at the top end of the process anyway, and this kind of allowed us to secretly almost come there and solve a problem that we have at the same time.
Absolutely. And I think that was I got really frustrated with we developed some great techniques for detecting issues and requirements, could prove the ROI, you know, beat any other form of test activity that you could do, couldn't get customers to adopt it because politically in those large waterfall organizations, oh, the BA function, that belongs to someone else, and we can't tread on that turf, et cetera, et cetera. So you're always trying to swim upstream as a tester and kind of hitting a brick wall. Mm. Whereas I found getting into the agile space, that changes quite radically.
Yeah. So, I must admit, you must though have some issues. I can imagine in your role, you must talk to lots of organisations, you know, from a testing front. And now, you know, it's not whether you're agile, it's whether you're not agile is really the question. So everyone now wants to be agile, and I'm doing air quotes as I say that. Mm. So how do you convince the management, and particularly the traditional test managers, right, who have this, you know, set way of things, that the role of a tester is different now in agile?
Well, look, I think it's kind of happening organically. To be honest, I don't really bother to convince people, because if I'm having to talk to a test manager, I'm probably wasting my time. Because if you're talking about agile and the person you're talking to is the test manager, then their job is probably on the line, and they will do anything to stop agile coming into that organization, to be perfectly frank. Because within a really agile framework, you don't need a test manager. It makes sense to have test leads within an agile team, but you don't need test managers. Those people's titles will change to something like release manager, or they might, you know, fully embrace the whole agile thing and become scrum masters or whatever, or they're just going to completely exit that organization. That's one of the reasons why we changed the name of the Australian Test Managers Forum to the Australian Software Quality Forum, because, you know, it'd been running for 10 years. It doesn't make sense to talk about test managers as a role anymore.
Is it shrinking? Like, the amount of people who actually run test departments now?
Look, if you look at the leading edge organisations, they probably have fewer people in what you would call dedicated testing roles. So, you know, we had some of the team from Atlassian speaking at the Software Quality Forum last year. They used to have a ratio of 1:4, so one tester to every 4 developers. They have a ratio of 1:10, because most of the heavy lifting is being done by the dev team, who are writing test automation code alongside their functional code, which makes sense. It's all software development. And then the role of the QA person in Atlassian's world, it's a quality assistant, they're actually just helping people to understand risk coverage strategically, what should I be doing, rather than necessarily spending hours writing individual test cases, executing those test cases, etc. So, but that's not going to work for every organization. Certainly there's, you know, not everyone's an Atlassian, not everyone's a, you know, and you'd see that same pattern in like eBay's and Google's and whatever.
So do you think that's the maturity or the level of the development staff to be able to take on those?
It's not just the maturity. I think it also has to do with what legacy you're carrying, right? There's heaps of organisations that part of their DNA is a legacy tech stack that's not going to go away, that's not amenable to an agile approach necessarily, where you've got a lot of test assets that still require quite a lot of hands-on maintenance. So I think it's about picking and choosing. And when we survey, so we do a biannual survey of testing practice across the country, and we've certainly seen an uptick in the people who are saying yes, they do agile, but it's not like we're seeing waterfall completely disappear. I would say it's more like 50-50. Like, most organizations say that they use both frequently, and I think it's about making sense of where that fits. If you've got a digital transformation, you've got mobile platforms, you've got web, that's got to be responsive to, you know, customer expectations, market demands, etc. That's where it's got to be nimble, so agile makes sense. You've got some, you know, legacy infrastructure that the business depends on. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, so to speak. Like, you might be trying to replace that and API the whole thing so you can sort of hollow it out and replace it with something else. That's a long-term kind of strategy. In the meantime, you just got to keep the lights on. So, I think the key thing is that stuff, you know, there's a lot more of the new and cool things happening in the agile space. So when I talk to testers, I talk a lot about how if you think that you can just continue doing manual, you know, test execution work, then your options are going to become really limited.
Mm.
You really need to become a lot more conversant with, okay, if you're not a technical programmer type of person, then build your skills in that kind of quasi BA product owner acceptance criteria kind of role, because there's a need for that. And if that's not your bag, then, you know, get yourself across whatever is the, you know, sensible set of automation tools for the tech stack that you're on, whether it's Selenium or Appium or, you know, any of the other dedicated things. But increasingly, that's about getting on board with whatever the broader tech stack is, not becoming a specialist in some niche testing tool that no one else in the organization uses. Because I definitely see a move in the industry off that stuff and onto generic, you know, IDEs or whatever it is, generic technology stacks where everyone's on the same platform.
So let me throw a couple of agile-related practices at you, and just a quick fire round here. What's your thought of how it impacts testing? So TDD.
So TDD, I see that as really that's a tester technique. I've often been surprised. A developer technique, not a tester technique. Mm-hmm. The number of people who've rung us up to say, can you help us with TDD? It's like, just because it's got the word testing in or test-driven in it doesn't mean that it's a testing technique.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, it's, I don't see too many people really practicing it in a disciplined way. I think it's a really good idea, but at the end of the day, I think it's a lot of organizations struggle to stay committed to, let's write the unit test first and then, you know, write the actual functional code later. You know, when they get under pressure, they just write the functional code.
What concerns me about that, though, and I'm back in, biting into my quick round here, what concerns me about that is unit testing was never optional. And that's one of the things that I see going around. We've got a similar amount of grey hair happening. Around for a few years. When I first started, and, you know, I was a mainframe developer at that time, I had to hand in my unit tests. I had to make sure it was tested before I handed over to some, you know, testing department in the sky somewhere who were going to test it and be darn sure. And even if I was going to compile, I had to wait for a little slot on the on the system. Now, because we've got everything kind of at our fingertips, unit testing's just sort of become one of those things that it is a little less relevant, particularly with some of the new technologies that are coming through. But there has to be some level of professionalism by the developer to say, you know what, I think this works.
Yeah, and look, I completely agree in that ideal world of that's what I'd like to see. Speaking as a tester, you know, the testers get blamed for inefficiency because we're spending all of this time doing things like field validation tests, where I'm like, surely that's not our concern, you know. Whether this field accepts,
if we're finding bugs there, it's something about a bug, right? A bug is showing some problem in the in the process that we should change at some earlier point, and that's the fact that we probably should have been doing some unit testing.
Yeah, exactly. But my experience is that trying to get organisations to commit to unit testing outside of safety critical and defence spaces, where it's pretty much mandatory, and people will really do it and really buy into it, but in almost everywhere else, it's kind of like a bit of a luxury. And I think to a certain extent...
I just think it's a problem in our industry that we have to take some craftsmanship into consideration here. That's a long debate that's a podcast on its own. Let me throw another one at you. BDD, behavior-driven development.
Well, and this is... They fit together as topics quite well. I think that BDD doesn't make TDD sort of obsolete because, yes, I agree, you should still have your unit tests in place. And someone was asking me earlier today, like, oh, all of my, you know, sort of like BDD sort of tests take too long to run. I'm like, yeah, because you're doing GUI, you know, end-to-end tests. If you expect that that's going to give you feedback in some sort of compile time cycle, then you're doing it wrong. You know, that's what unit tests are for. And even then, you probably should, if you need to have some end-to-end, look for API options rather than driving it through the GUI, that kind of stuff. But you know, I was alluding to Cucumber, etc. So, you know, defining some acceptance criteria in terms of what the end user is expecting and will accept, I think that, you know, doing that up front really helps developers understand what it is that I'm supposed to be building. And I think they feel the value out of that more so than they feel the value of, you know, unit testing is some kind of hygiene thing that I should do. Getting acceptance criteria up front is something that really helps me understand what it is that I actually need to code and what I don't need to code, and solve some of those over-engineering issues. And then if you automate that, which if you're serious about BDD, that's what you do because you can't do it manually, then you get a whole bunch of benefit and it really helps your team velocity. So, you know, but yeah, it's not a silver bullet. There are none. We know that. But yeah, look, I think that's probably the level that I find, you know, myself and others get really engaged in coaching the adoption of that practice. And what I tend to say these days is that when you start to see problem areas or high risk areas coming or being highlighted by BDD, that's when you go, dev manager, you should really make sure that all of the people who write this code write unit tests, you know, and then they're kind of like, there's some good justification for that.
Pair programming?
Pair programming, don't see it being done very much.
How about from a tester perspective?
But from a tester, again, I haven't seen it deliver a much real benefit. I think one of the things that tends to happen though, when you have devs and testers kind of like co-located, like elbow to elbow, the tester, depending on their technical level, if they're doing automation, they're really a dev, software dev in test kind of person rather than a tester who an automator who's learned how to script in Ruby or something and everyone else is writing in something else. If they can read the code, what tends to happen over time is you get a version of pair programming where because the tester's writing automation code, they're actually looking at what the dev, like, what are you calling that thing and how's that going to work? So I can write my test and then go, by the way, I think there's an issue there, you know. So that I see as a organic kind of benefit that I sort of see as a little bit more common than, I think the appetite, at least in Australia, is pretty low for the actual dedicated pair programming. People see it's too expensive. I don't know what your experience is.
Yeah, I mean, the key thing is having people co-located and having testers who are more technically aware is the key thing for me.
Absolutely.
So upskilling testers just have some basic, being able to read basic pseudocode, you know, not that you have to understand what all the curly braces mean, but when you see a statement there and is that saying that B is going into X? I'm not sure that's correct. And we're just asking the question, which is very useful for the developer who then goes, yeah, of course it's got to, hang on a sec, come back to me in 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that dynamic does emerge, and it's hard to get people to do any of these things because they should. And this is where I think sort of like manifestos as such don't really work. But when those goals or objectives are things that arise from, hey, I benefit from doing this, and it helps me achieve my goal. I mean, it's sexy to talk about gamification, right? But everyone's kind of like got their target. So when the tester has got their target of, I have to write the automation piece for the function that you're writing, then I'm going to inspect your code because it helps me do what I need to do. Mm. And then you get some benefit from that before my test even runs. Yeah,
absolutely. So we're at the Connected conference, and so part of your talk was really starting to talk about mobile and IoT and those type of things. And often when we a lot of the testing books, even the agile testing books, they're getting a bit better, but it's always traditionally been the, oh, here's the pet store web application,
right? Yeah.
And we talk about Selenium, and Selenium is a great web based testing tool, and yes, we've done front ends to death. Often when I see particularly mobile developers talk about mobile applications, there's some key differences, obviously. I mean, the speed to market is a heck of a lot quicker than we've ever been at. But the tooling is not really there to support a lot of that. So you're talking about that in your talk. So tell us a little bit about how the testing, or the agile testing landscape is now changing, particularly now as we take on more of this mobile Internet of Things world.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that's... mobile is definitely challenging, and then I think IoT is going to take it to a new level again in terms of the... So there's a number of factors that I think come into play. One is that the expectations of devices are much higher at the consumer level compared to software. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the things that let us all as an industry off the hook was that the community had been kind of educated into expecting blue screens of death. It's a computer, it crashed. Oh, well, that's just normal.
Yeah, just reboot. Turn on off again.
But our mobile devices, even though they are basically computers, we still, I think, culturally think of them as mechanical devices, like the handsets that we used to, that were wired into the wall, and it should just work. And I think then IoT takes that even further. So the more that these connected devices, whether it's a mobile touchscreen or whether some kind of IoT device that just happens to have Wi-Fi embedded within it and some sensor technology, the more that that just looks like an everyday object, the more that people just expect it to work and they don't think of it as software.
Or if it's a sensor in the middle of a farm field, in the middle of middle of nowhere somewhere too, right? With raging weather conditions and those type of things, no one wants to hop in their truck and drive 30 kilometers to reboot it.
Reboot it, exactly. So the expectations are much higher. I mean, my wife's working in sort of like the IoT space, and a whole bunch of the devices she works with get buried underground. Mm. If they go wrong, it's a real issue to fix them up. So
how's that changed in testing? Because, unfortunately, a lot of traditional testers I talk to are so fixated on the interface.
Exactly.
Right? Because it's something that, with the computer, we fire up the browser.
Yeah.
If I know I want to do a calculation over here, whilst I probably know I should do an API test, right, I'm quite happy to go through the 37 screens to get there and get the thing, because I can see the thing on the screen. But it's so much harder because with mobile devices, because they're not the same, with IoT devices, because as I said, it's going to be underground. How do we start to test that effectively?
Look, I think that's really what is driving the demand for testers to become a lot more technical. So it's you'll see it increasingly on, essential skills will be things like SOAP UI or whatever. There'll be some kind of tooling that people are expected to be able to deal with API style tests, deal with XML, deal with all of those sort of distributed architecture technologies.
And is there a problem that we come from this world, and you talked about this in your talk, that we've got the traditional testers who've been the more manual thump at the keyboard we just talked about, and then because these people didn't really have the skills, we then brought up this intermediate thing, which was these test automators who could drive things from Selenium through to QuickTest Pro and other type things. Problem is that we need the skills of the manual testers, but we kind of need some of the technical skills of these guys, and actually we can't afford to have both roles hanging around.
And look, I think that's ultimately where I can see people like Atlassian have ended up with the people with the technical skills are the developers. They can deal with all of those architectural, non-GUI interfaces, et cetera, they can consume XML, YAML, whatever it is that you need to pump into something and then, extract out some result. But they don't think like testers. They don't think about risk. They don't think about the unhappy path. Developers are just inherently optimistic. Of course it's going to work like this. Of course people want to use it like this. Tesla, you know, really honed their skill in thinking about all the ways in which things can be used and abused and go wrong. So that dynamic you want to try and keep. And
while still adding some value to the process.
Yeah, exactly. And by automating the outcomes but having some input around what are the sorts of things that we should be testing for, you know, have I got the right kind of coverage? You know, whenever I've taught, you know, I've had developers come in to learn unit testing, and you know, the most amusing part of that course is getting, you know, proposing, here's an architecture, tell me 10 things that could go wrong, and the room's silent. People can't think of the things that can go wrong because they're not thinking that way. Whereas testers in the room will go, oh, this could do, you could do this, you could do that. So you know, that dynamic is the thing you want to keep, and that's where I think that role of sort of, if you like, coaching the people who are then crafting the scenarios and actually, you know, it doesn't make sense to talk about the manual execution. You automate that. You get the, you know, computers do the execution.
So we've got given that the tooling is still immature and it's really still a fairly young field. What do we need to do from the testing perspective to be able to be ready for, you know, I mean, it's already hockey sticking, but we haven't even seen the hockey stick yet, which means that we do need, you know, good agile teams, good agile, you know, IoT mobile testers to be out there. So what do we need to do you think?
I'm really encouraged just having a number of testing conversations here at Yow Connected. It's a big, I think you and I talked about this before. When I was in this very building a few years ago, one of the first KitCons, I think I was the only tester at the conference, even though it was a
continuous integration testing
conference. It was like weird.
What the hell are you doing here? Get out.
So there's clearly a lot more people in testing roles who are coming along to, you know, these kind of events. I think, the tooling will eventually emerge. People will find ways of doing what it is that they need to do. And I think the key thing that I say to testers is that, you know, get technical. You know, if you've got any kind of aptitude for that, get on the tools, just start playing with stuff. You know, expose yourself to, you know, understand what people mean when they're talking about microservices. You know, don't let the jargon just sort of like cause your eyes to glaze over.
And does that mean, you know, right now, and this is what I try and encourage people to do, is that, you know, I see lots of testers who don't even understand what continuous integration is. Right? Oh, that's the developer thing. And I'm like, no, if that thing's going red, that's a quality indicator for you.
Absolutely.
So even if you're not ready for that now, start using the things that your team already has.
Look, we get a lot of inquiries, and I find it really interesting that, you know, coming from, you know, still kind of almost shaking off the identity of being a testing organization, we get a lot of inquiries. People are like, can you help us with our continuous integration? And I'm as guilty as anyone of thinking, oh, but isn't that a developer thing? And it's like, no, actually, it's not. It's a team thing, and if anything, it's a quality thing. So get in and play with that stuff. There's no reason why, if you're listening to this, you know, you can spin stuff up on AWS probably for nothing, or next to nothing, and you can play with Jenkins, you can play with all that stuff. It's not hard. You know, you'll see, you know, like job ads that will be expecting you to have experience in this stuff. You don't have to have 2 or 3 or 4 years of experience in this stuff to play with it and learn the concepts. Yes, okay, if you're going to go deep down the Maven rabbit hole, then some of those things can get complex, and you need to have real world projects to really draw out the complexity. But yeah, there's pretty low barriers to entry in terms of understanding where that fits, and in terms of value to the organization, that's where it's at. I mean, both from a career point of view, and I think just as an organizational point of view, the value that QA-focused people can bring in is really around enabling that whole continuous integration, continuous deployment pipeline. So these days, I talk about how QA helps organizations deliver with low risk and high speed. It's, you know, I talk less about safety because unless you're in a safety critical space, it's more about speed, and you want to get out there, but you don't want it to blow up in your face.
Absolutely. And I guess the advice, the flip side to that is, because there's not a lot of testers perhaps listening to this, is that if you're a coach or you're in an agile team, convincing those that are in that role to do exactly the same thing and actually guide them through it.
Yeah, enable that. I mean, pairing people up a little bit. I mean, I think some of the things that are barriers to entry for testers is just some of the terminology and the feeling like they don't belong in that space. The reality is most people aren't really owning it anyway. So if you're a coach and you can bring someone in, pair them up with someone who can just help them understand a little bit more of the tooling and how that fits together, and then let them loose to get some of that stuff happening. I think you get a heck of a lot of benefit.
Well, Mark, it's great to see you flying the testing flag at the Connected Conference and also flying the Agile, the whole Agile testing thing as well, because it is, particularly in large organisations, it's a bit of a struggle. So if people want to know more about you and what you do, where can they find some more out?
Just go to kjr.com.au and you can find out, there'll be a little bit of a bio about me, and you'll find my Twitter handle, etc., and any of the events. There's a whole bunch of events that we'll be publishing the schedule for going through this year and right through into next year. We'll be at Vivid Ideas, that's in Sydney, later in the year. I'll be getting along to QCup in Sydney in November.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be around, but yeah, drop me a line and look forward to continuing the quality conversation.
Excellent. Thanks for taking the time.
No worries. Cheers, Steve. Great. Cheers.